Welcome to the podcast series for AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology. I'm your host, Kara Hansel-Kehan. Today, we'll discuss the article by Patel et al. Titled, Sex Differences in Forearm Vasoconstrictor Response to Voluntary Apnea. This article published online December 6th, 2013. My guests today are guest editor Virginia Miller, lead author Matthew Muller, and expert Nina Stackenfeld. Let's get started.
Thank you, Kara. The idea of individualized medicine is gaining momentum both within the research area and the medical communities. In response to this, the American Physiological Society launched a special call for papers dealing specifically with the basic physiology of sex differences. In response to that call for papers, Dr. Patel submitted this article. So Matt, would you please tell us what sleep apnea is and how you came to understand the physiological differences between men and women for this condition?
Sleep apnea is a sleep disorder characterized by pauses in breathing throughout the night, as well as shallow breathing. So because of these breathing impairments, people are not able to get adequate amounts of oxygen into their body, and also they retain more carbon dioxide. This causes an activation of the sympathetic nervous system and leads to a rise in blood pressure. And so we're looking at the peripheral vascular responses. So although we are using a laboratory or basic science model of voluntary apnea, we think that some of the underlying physiology is very similar to what is observed in patients with sleep apnea.
Matt, are there sex differences in the prevalence or incidence of sleep apnea?
There is definitely a difference between men and women in the prevalence of sleep apnea. In the literature, you see somewhere between 2 and 8-fold more prevalence in men. However, there might be an underdiagnosis of sleep apnea in women. And there's been a number of studies that looked at this. So women who present to their physician with a possible diagnosis of sleep apnea seem to have different symptoms than men. Men typically will experience snoring at night and daytime sleepiness, whereas women will not always present those symptoms. They'll present things like restless leg syndrome, depression, nightmares, hallucinations, and oftentimes they do not snore as severely, or they will not report snoring as being very severe.
How was the study designed to investigate the peripheral vasoconstriction in a sex-specific way?
So these were laboratory studies that we did here at Penn State Hershey Heart and Vascular Institute. And we had the people situated in the supine posture. We were controlling their skin temperature, keeping it neutral, so that all of the responses we saw with blood flow regulation would all be due to reflex changes and not due to the confounding effects of ambient temperature. We studied a group of about 10 young men and 10 young women, premenopausal women. So these were women in their 20s. And we studied them in the early follicular phase of their menstrual cycle. And we started seeing some really interesting differences in that men had more vasoconstriction than women. And this was pretty consistent. Almost every single man had more vasoconstriction than every single woman, which in human physiology is really rare to see. So then we also enrolled a group of older postmenopausal women. They were in their 60s and 70s, as well as a group of older men. So we actually had 4 groups. It took an extra amount of time to complete the study, but it really strengthened our case that young women are quite different than young men in response to apnea.
Nina, would you comment about the importance, how this relates to inclusion of women in studies in a more general aspect?
Including women in studies is important because in the past we didn't. And the study was nicely designed and very carefully done.
The influence of hormones on the autonomic system is very dramatic. Matt, could you comment on how you controlled for some of the hormonal variations in the groups that you studied?
In our study, we controlled for hormones by enrolling the young women in our study in the early follicular phase of their menstrual cycle. We used a more large-scale approach and just enrolled the older women who physiologically would be expected, because they're postmenopausal, to have very low levels of female sex hormones.
So the differences that were observed were in a young population, which could be considered reproductively competent. But the difference disappeared with age. So this points to an effect of hormones rather than sex per se. Would either one of you care to comment on that?
Yes, I first of all would like to comment on the general issue of sex differences with regard to apnea. I think it's really important to remember that there is a very strong, what I view as an interaction between obesity and sex differences. For example, when men and women are young, the women have to be quite a bit heavier or more obese generally in order to actually show symptoms, however they're described to their physicians, of sleep apnea. So there's a very important sex difference between men and women in that regard, especially when the women are young. That tends to also change as women get older, and I would speculate to some extent that that has to do not only necessarily in changes of in hormones, but maybe an indirect change in effect of hormones, in that as women get older, the type of obesity that we see in older women changes, and that it becomes a more android-style obesity. And they also tend to gain weight near their neck area, which may also be an important risk factor for apnea.
Matt, what are your thoughts on that?
I also agree with Nina in that the data we have here is more of a hormonal difference, or presumably it's a more hormonal effect than a pure sex difference. But clinically, the expression of obstructive sleep apnea is seen in both young women and older women, and the spike usually in the diagnosis usually occurs around the time of menopause. So there's other things in the actual sleep apnea patients that are going to be different, that are not hormone related. So some of these are like the neck size, the size of the mandible, the size of the oropharynx, the position of the larynx. So I think the data we have in our study looking at the efferent side of this reflex, looking at the blood vessels, is almost entirely a hormonal effect, because had it been a true sex difference, you would have expected to see it in older women as well, but we did not see that.
So Matt, what are some of the broader physiological ramifications of these observations?
In our study, we used apnea as the hypoxic stress to stimulate the sympathetic nervous system and look at blood vessel responses. But there's also other things that are experienced in everyday life that might elicit a different response. So, for example, going to high altitude, it seems like women have a bigger hypoxic ventilatory response than men, although that's still debated. So for a given amount of oxygen desaturation, they take bigger breaths. People with COPD or asthma or pulmonary disease, there's probably sex differences in how men and women respond to that type of stress.
Nina, what would you suggest for other investigators in these areas to, when they study differences in men and women, to consider in the design of their experiments?
Well, I think it's really important to not underestimate the impact of exogenous hormones during a study like this. But I think it's really important when we do look at these things that we try to control as much as possible, that the hormonal exposure is the same within our groups. I think it's really important before we embark on a study about sex differences, whether it really matters or not. In other words, why are we examining the sex differences? And are the sex differences that we discover or intend to discover important enough that we would actually do something to change treatment? And I think Matt listed a number of really excellent reasons. And he started out with one of the first reasons, which is women tend to talk to their physicians differently than men do. So finding out sex differences in physiological responses can be very important in that way.
Matt, what do you think?
With respect to designing a study, these are very challenging studies to do, as you mentioned, because some of the women are on either an oral contraceptive or some sort of hormonal contraceptive. So many studies in our lab and other institutions, it's just easier to study all men. And so I think we have to get away from that and not be intimidated by the fact that studying women is often a little more difficult and more time consuming. And I also really agree with Nina on the fact that sex differences should somehow advance clinical medicine. Physiology really should advance our clinical understanding of how these things work. And we see a lot of these sex differences in the clinical presentation. And we kind of wanted to go back to the lab the benchtop and say, why are these things happening? And is there differences in the effect or the blood vessel responses?
Any final comments, Matt, regarding this study or things you would like to leave our audience with?
I think the take-home message here is that men and women are different in response to a sympathetic stressor as simple as a voluntary breath hold or a voluntary apnea, and how this extends into a clinical population we're currently working on. But the take-home point here is that there are definitely differences between young men and young women, and these differences are lost with aging, such that older women and older men are indistinguishable, and they look just like younger men.
So I would like to just close today by thanking Matt and Nina for taking time out of their very busy schedule to participate today. And Kara, I'll let you wrap it up.
You've been listening to an AJP Heart and Circ podcast. For more podcasts, visit us online at ajpheart.physiology.org. Thank you.